You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh, well, guess beggars can't be choosy.
You know, when I heard this song, when it came out, it made me laugh. Yeah. You know, it's a song about mental health. So if you've never actually listened to the words, I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed, get along with the voices inside of my head. Pretty funny. If this song, if this show had a song, and it might, that would be it. Eminem and Rihanna. Anyway, good morning to everybody out there. Hope you had a good weekend, as summer is officially here. Yeah. So congratulations to the Pittsburgh Penguins, who won the Stanley Cup. And also my Yankees just ripped it up over the weekend. Annihilated the Baltimore Orioles. But the big news was a home run that a young outfielder for the Yankees hit. Almost went 500 feet. Yeah. Like, that's almost out of Yankee Stadium. Like, out. Like into a neighborhood out. That's not supposed to happen. Anyway, he's an interesting kid. Adopted. Both parents school teachers. Seems to be, every account you see is a, we want heroes, right? We need heroes in our world. So, his name is Aaron Judge. And, he's the real deal, man. He is the real deal. So, he crushed one. And then he hit another one. But it was just a line drive. But because he's such a monster, it went over, it happened to go over the fence. So, anyway, let me tell you what we're going to do on the show today. We'll check some news headlines real quick, and then actually, we may not check news headlines real quick. But there's a bunch of stuff in the news. The House Appropriations Committee will talk to the Secretary of Defense. They do not think that there's enough money in the Trump budget for the agenda that the president has or at least articulated. So there's a number of people that are disappointed that they're not seeing what he said relative to defense readiness translate. In a pretty unique setting, tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern time, the Secretary of Defense will testify in terms of readiness and money and things like that. So General Mattis, Secretary Mattis, prime time, which ought to be an interesting event. So we have that going on tonight. And then there was three United States Army Rangers killed in Afghanistan in a blue-on-green incident, which is, I would say, terrifying for a lot of people because, you know what, how do you protect yourself? You know, how do you protect yourself from somebody like that? And the answer is, I don't know that you can. And so I don't know that it's ever been successfully done where somebody sees them and pulls a pistol out and shoots them before he shoots you. And so certainly our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of those. For the second time in a week, the Navy's looking for a sailor that has gone overboard in the Western Pacific. That's always disturbing. I think it's somewhat understandable on a carrier where you can get blown off the flight deck by, you know, jet blast on any other surface ship, often you wonder, is it a suicide attempt? Somebody who, for whatever reason, goes overboard. But anyway, because the chances of surviving that are very, 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 very small. So that's going on in the news. And then there's the Korea stuff continues. So we'll talk about all that. Anyway, on the program today, a writer, contributing editor for SoftRep, former Marine Sergeant Alex Holling is going to join us. He's joined us before, and fun to have on. So we'll talk about some of the things Alex is writing about. He a couple of things. He writes about Mosul, so we'll talk to him about that as the Mosul campaign winds down a little bit. See what kind of catches his eye relative to that. Also, the he also writes about Kathy Griffin, essentially saying that. And I thought his column was pretty interesting. Can we get beyond if that idiot is in your party or somebody else's? And can we call an idiot, or is that too much? Is that too hard for us? So we'll talk to him about that. Grant Newsham will join us. We'll talk three different things about Korea, China. One, the suspension of the THAAD battery deployment. What's up with that? The new prime minister said that the new president is said that he didn't know about the other four batteries that were being set up. Thought there were two, so that's been suspended. North Korea then launches surface to ship missiles. What's up with that? Is that just them being them? And then in the last week or two, you've seen American diplomats and government officials praising China. Now, Grant would tell us that's a fool's errand, because the Chinese, they don't deserve it. So why is that happening? What's going on there? So we'll talk to Grant about that. And then the gunner is going to join us, so we'll catch up with Mike from we might not talk baseball, but there's a whole bunch of stuff in the news about the Marine Corps. Anyway, news out of Paris Island, Article 32 hearing for the battalion commander. That was the battalion commander for the battalion in which that a recruit, his last name was Siddiqui, was committed suicide by all accounts. Reports that he was hazed. The Article 32 hearing went on for 14 hours. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I've never heard anything like that. Also, I know the defense attorney in the case for the battalion commander. His name's Colby Volke. I've had him on my program before. So we'll see if we can get him to come on. I don't imagine he'll talk about the case itself. But one of the things that he did comment publicly about was the number of people that have been granted immunity. I think as many as six different people granted immunity, to include the regimental commander. Interesting. And in the case, he said it's unprecedented. So we'll talk about that a little bit at some point this week. Anyway, good morning to the United States Marine Corps Band. Makes it official.
my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Check the weather there. Ronald Reagan's a riot. There's a, if I have a chance, I'll play it. There's a little clip. He used to tell Russian stories. One that he actually could attribute to Russians, right? And he got a bunch of them. Pretty funny. We'll go check the weather here around the Marine Corps. And then Alex Holland going to join us. He's a contributing editor at Software. Former Sergeant, United States Marine Corps. So we'll talk to him on a Monday. I'm stalling because it takes so long for the weather to load. Yeah. Currently sunny and 56 at Camp Pendleton. I can tell you that, though. President of the Philippines says he did not ask for those American aircraft. Just to make it clear. Exactly. He knew what everybody was thinking. They just showed up. They just showed up and started working in the area. Oh, really? That's how that works? That nobody from your government requested it? They just kind of showed up. Got it. Okay. If that's what you say, then I guess that's what we're doing. But that's normally not the way it works, okay? Just so you know. What the hell? I'm dying here, just so you know. Well, screw it, the weather. Then we're not doing the weather around the Marine Corps. I've had enough of it. All right. This hour brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the one and only Battle Mug. So sit back, relax, enjoy the morning. Thanks for tuning in to All Marine Radio, and Alex Holling's coming up next. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global Soft Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. what I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Everybody get up.
Yeah, they got sued for this song. It's all right. Joining me from the Soft Rep organization, contributing editor, former Marine Sergeant Alex Hollings. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm great. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be back.
Have you ever been sued for anything?
I have not. Although I just recently ran into a situation where I had to get an attorney on retainer. And, it turns out getting an attorney on retainer is just giving them a whole bunch of money in case they work one day.
And, are you
I'm learning the hard
the
way that the possibility of a lawsuit is expensive.
Yeah. So was it over something you wrote, or was it in a different part of your life?
A different part of my life. There was an accident that happened down near my house, and I went out and helped get the people out and everything, but... It turned out that there was an issue with the other person's vehicle, and I guess the two of them are suing one another, and, you know, the investigators recommended that I get an attorney just in case I get roped into it. So I did, maybe I didn't need to, but it just seemed like the safe thing to do, you know?
You know what? I hate that. Well, just in case you might need to go ahead and get an attorney. Come on, man. You know, that's not free, right? You guys know
they're
recommending that. How about this? I'll get him. You pay for him.
Right? You know, especially because I just gave this guy a whole bunch of money on the off chance he'll work one day.
Like, well, why is that necessary? Why can't I just come get you when I need you? Why do I need to? So let me explain this. Why do you need to retain somebody?
Well, you know, I think that in this situation, I'm probably going to get away with not actually having my attorney get involved. But from my understanding, it's really all about just being able to say when they call you, oh, no, don't talk to me, talk to my attorney. And without that attorney having money in his pocket before you say that, he won't take their call.
Well, oh, okay. Well, couldn't you just say, yeah, my attorney's Mike McNamara, here's his number?
Nobody That's what I should have done.
Right? Come on, man. You're a Marine, man. Like, what? Like, yeah, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Oh, I got to pay? Yeah, that didn't happen. Hey, Shemp, will you be my attorney? Yeah, I'll be your attorney. You know, man. You know me. I'm your girl. First of all, just a little bit about you. Alex, born and raised in the Boston area, right? What part of Boston?
Well, kind of all over New England. I moved around a lot as a kid, but I spent my last couple of years in the Marine Corps station in Fort Devens, which is central Mass, and living out of Hudson, which is kind of inside that Boston beltway there. And, you know, I loved it. It's a great city, but, I'm not a city guy. So when I got the opportunity to move into a small town in Georgia, you know, kind of cut my expenses a bit, I jumped at it.
Yeah, that's you and I were talking before we came on the air, but the best quality of life in the nation is small town America. Now, I would caveat that by saying that find a place where you enjoy the weather. I lived up in North Dakota, okay, which is a little cold in the winter, but as long as you have an automatic car starter and a seat heater, I thought that was livable. What I really struggle with in my life is humidity. I'm not a fan of it. You, Southern Georgia, you get a little bit of it, don't you?
Oh, man, yeah. You know, when I was stationed in 29 Palms, I used to think it was perfectly normal to throw on a flak jacket and go running in the hills, and it was 115 degrees out. Here, if it's 80 degrees out, you walk outside like you're walking into a bowl of soup. You know, it's rough. On Memorial Day, I was doing the Murph Challenge, you know, with the flak jacket on. And you're only running, you know, a mile at a time. But man, oh man, it's like you're running literally through a physical barrier. The humidity can be so thick down here sometimes.
Yeah, I just, and then the bugs that go with the humidity, that just to me sucks. It's, let me tell you, it's why I've always loved the West Coast. And even, you know, even the western part of the United States where there's less humidity. And even North Dakota, I mean, the summer was pretty humidity-free. And but I tell everybody, you know what? In just about every part of the country, except west of Interstate 5 in Southern California, you're going to get 90 days of bad weather, 60 to 90 days. And you can, so you need to decide if you want that in cold, in heat, in humidity, in rain. How do you want that? And then,
you know, I think you're 100% right.
Thanks.
Because, you know, I spend as many days huddled in, next to my air conditioner since moving to Georgia as I used to spend huddled next to my heater living in Boston. But at least I don't have to shovel here. You know?
You know what? You're right. You're right. The but again, if you, so to me, that's the trade. If you look at wherever you live and you can say, I can live with that, those 60 to 90 days a year, then that's where you should live. And but again, there's no place, like, I laugh, like, people in the center part of the country are deathly afraid of earthquakes. They come out to California and they talk about the earthquakes. It's like, man, you guys live in Tornado Alley. Are you kidding me? Those things those things roll all over the place and they annihilate, you know, small towns. And it looks like somebody, you know, runs a giant lawnmower with a really bad blade right through the middle of town, and just every stuff is everywhere. Oh yeah, but come on, you go into your basement, it's no big deal. So it's I always find it interesting. It depends where you grow.
Meanwhile, the two earthquakes that happened while I was in California were both so small I slept through them.
Yeah.
So I can't even consciously say I've experienced an earthquake.
That's my point. It's hilarious. And so when you're from California, you're like, come on, man, the earthquake. Oh, you mean the one where we're dropping the ocean and Nevada and Arizona become oceanfront? Yeah, yeah, that one. Yeah, okay, well, let me know when that happens.
To me. I'll say, when I lived in California, when, especially at the DMV in California, I'd often wish that it would fall off into the ocean, but it doesn't look like it's happening yet.
Is it, what's a DMV like in Georgia? Is it the same?
It's amazing. I gotta be, it's probably one of the best perks of moving to the South, is that, number one, people tend to be much more polite by default than I'm accustomed to.
Right.
But also, they have separate, like, they have the Registry of Motor Vehicles, where you go specifically just for driver's licenses and license plates and nothing else. So you get in and you get out and, you know, you move through really quickly. And if you have other kind of stranger issues that you need to deal with, they have a different office. So they kind of, they keep the people with longer issues separate from those of us that are just trying to get in and out on our lunch break.
Right.
And I mean, I got my Georgia driver's license in 10 minutes. And I'm a fan. I really am.
That is laughable. Absolutely laughable. All right,
the Vermont DMV is incredible, too. They still know my name. When I go back up and visit Vermont, I walk in and they're like, oh, hey, Alex, how's it going? I'm spoiled.
That's not most of our typical experience at the DMV. Let's talk current events before we talk about some of the things you've written. Give me your take on the whole James Comey thing.
Yeah, this is tough, man. You know, I to be perfectly honest, I tend to avoid writing about domestic politics while it's ongoing, but I try to stay very on top of it so that I can try to formulate, you know, a position on something like this. And Comey's one of those tough ones. You know, I read the 7-page document the day before his testimony, and then I watched all of his testimony live, and none of it was a smoking gun. There was no, you know, huge revelation that happened during it. And I anticipated that. I think that the media has covered it as though, you know, the way that he worded this one sentence could be a smoking gun. Or maybe we can manipulate this into something bigger than it really is. But I kind of feel like the whole Comey testimony is going to become a non-issue unless Jeff Sessions or Donald Trump, under oath, say something that contradicts it directly, in which case we'll have to focus on it because we have to determine who it is that's committing perjury. But beyond that, I think that it's going to end up becoming a non-event. I think 3 weeks from now, we'll have a whole new suite of things to be worried about and new testimonies to be pouring over. And I think, all in all, it's a ripple, don't get me wrong, but I think it's not going to be as big of a deal as maybe it's being made out to be.
All right. Let me give you a little bit of a – let me just give you my opinion.
I'd love to hear it. Yeah.
Well, this is I'm a student of leadership, right, being around the Marine Corps for so long and then – and so I've kind of – something's got my attention, and that is something that I'll call leadership at the point of confrontation. And in every one of the marquee leadership failures in the Marine Corps that we have – the Hamidiya thing in Iraq where Marines from 3-5 drag somebody out of their home, the urination on the corpses in Afghanistan, the things that have happened at Paris Island, and I'll just use those. Every one of them, when it happened, had other NCOs, staff NCOs, or officers standing there while it happened. So what happens is, right, Hollings is doing stupid stuff, right? And McNamara's standing there, and I look at you and I say, hey, man, knock it off. And you say, hey, shut up or get out of here. What are you going to do about it? And I say, hey, man, be cool. Nothing, but we're not doing this. You're not supposed to. Shut up. We're doing it. And I resolve that, well, I guess I did my best, like, whatever, okay. And I either leave or turn my back and walk away or do something, right? And so I kind of throw Comey into that in terms of this. Because I listened to the whole, we played the whole testimony here live. And because it was a piece of American history, because it's such a big deal. He gets asked, when the president sends the attorney general out of the Oval Office, and know this, right? He's the head of the FBI. This is not the first rodeo he's ever attended. You know he had friends that told him, hey, whenever you deal with Donald Trump, keep your hand on your wallet and take copious notes of your meetings because that guy is a shady character. He'll lie if he has to, but he'll get his way. If you watch him in the media, it's how he does it. So be very careful. So he'll walk into the Oval Office like a Boy Scout, for God's sakes. So when he says, when they asked him, why didn't you tell the president you couldn't talk about that he was straying beyond, you know, where the conversation should stay, he said, I was stunned. And so I thought about that. You were stunned. Okay, I'll give you that. Maybe you were momentarily stunned. Okay, but there was no flashbang or hand grenade that went off in the room. Okay, so now I begin to, you gained your wits enough to take notes in the car. Why didn't you walk back into the White House and say, Mr. President, I need to speak with you. You and I can't have this conversation again. Okay, because what I feel is you're telling me this. Is that what you meant? Right? And to which, you know how Trump's no stooge, right? He would have said, of course I didn't mean that. All I meant is Flynn's a good guy. He's been punished enough, blah, 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 blah. And Trump would walk it back because Trump knows he's no fool. That's why he sent the attorney general out of the office. So to me.
And that's also why he was specific in his word choices as well.
Right.
Exactly,
I hope, right?
Agreed.
And so,
yeah.
But to me, Comey fails the FBI. He fails his office by not looking at the president. And it's that leadership at the point of confrontation, right? Trump staring at him, and it's awkward. But you got to stare back, and you got to stand up. And my point, you know, in every one of these instances is, if the people that are in those situations would stare back and say, "No, do you want to fight? Let's go." People wouldn't have got bad conduct discharges. They wouldn't have gone to the brig, right? Comey may have been forced to resign, but none of the rest of this nonsense would have gone on. And so I just find it's a really interesting issue, this leadership at the point of confrontation. And then Comey, he goes in his car and he takes notes. Then he goes and he huddles with his team, decides that we won't tell the attorney general because he's – no, man. On stuff like that, you walk straight in. I don't care who's the attorney general. And you say,
this just happened. I need to tell somebody. And so, again, I think that that leadership at the point of confrontation is a very, very interesting subject.
I think you're 100%. I feel like that same issue was echoed when he was talking about how he gave the memo to his friend, who's a Cornell law professor, for his friend to release. So literally, it's just to kind of create one degree of separation between him. And I don't buy that he didn't want to feed the seagulls out in front of his house. I think that he was trying to protect himself, to insulate himself a bit. And I'm not necessarily saying that I would blame a person for wanting to do so. It's just not what I expect of a person in that position. You know, I wouldn't blame your regular guy, me. You know, I wouldn't blame me for being a bit awestruck when I meet the president and maybe not choosing my words carefully or maybe getting a little too frantic and not following through on what I should. Like, for instance, calling him to task on something that he really ought to have been called to task on.
Right.
I really want to give someone the benefit of the doubt. I've heard from a lot of people that even before Donald Trump was the president, he had this real presence that you can't really catch through the media, through TV and stuff. But, you know, in person, he's an intimidating character. I want to give you the benefit of the doubt, but not when you're the director of the FBI. You know, if you're, you know, if you are in line at the grocery store and you run into the president, I can absolutely expect you to be a bit flummoxed. But when you're in a meeting with the president of the United States as the director of the FBI.
After he tells the attorney general, you can leave.
Yeah.
His son-in-law says, do you want me to stay? No, you can leave too. Now look, I've gotten in trouble before. When my dad sent everybody out of the room, there was going to be some serious shit that was going to go down. Okay, and so
absolutely.
Yeah, and so you could hear, I could hear Comey thinking in his head, right? Uh oh, whatever's something bad's about to happen, right? And all the things my friends have told me, right? I need to. And the thing he doesn't do is he doesn't stand up and do what he should have done, which is, I cannot have this conversation with you. Which is,
you know, it's office politics involved in national politics.
Right.
But, you know, it was almost as though Comey was taking the passive-aggressive route. And he was just going to, like, handle this in, you know, in real time, but then he would go back and get with other people and strategize what his next move would be. I can't blame Comey for doing any of these things legally, for instance. You know, I can understand why he's trying to protect himself and things like that. I expect better and I expect more out of prominent leaders in our government. I mean, which, to be fair, you got to say about President Trump as well. I think that Trump, at this point, at least from what the Comey testimony pointed to me, I'm not sure that it's as much about trying to hide something really nefarious so much as it sounded to me like Trump was like, I'd like to get past all this. Now, I could be wrong. You know,
the other thing I've seen I've seen this in investigations. You know, I'm getting investigation for whatever, and you're a colonel that I've worked for, right? And you hear about it, you call me and you say, Mac, what's going on? I'm like, oh, this happened and this happened. You know, hey, who's the regimental commander? Oh, Colonel so-and-so. Well, I know him. I'll pick up the phone. I'll call him. So he picks up the phone and he calls and he says, hey, you know, McNamara's a good dude, just so you know that, right? You know, he's worked for me on three separate occasions, blah, blah, blah. If you need any kind of character witnesses, call him. You see people go to bat for people all the time in this kind of stuff. Now, again, Trump's a shady guy, no doubt. But shady and illegal are two different things. And I agree with you. When, you know, we can hold other people to a lower standard. But when you're the director of the FBI and you've been to the rodeo before and you raise your hand to support and defend the Constitution, to me, you know, as there's an old native, I think it's a Sioux saying that, you know, today may be a good day to die. And when that day comes for you, you've got to be up to it. You swore an oath to be up to it. And the oath was he should have done the same thing with Loretta Lynch when she says, we're not going to call this an investigation, we're going to call it a matter. Ma'am, I run the FBI, I don't run the DNC. Okay, we do investigations. If I'm asked, I'm going to call it an investigation because that's what it is. I'm not going to play politics with it. I'm not going to politicize it. If you don't want me to speak about it, then you handle it. But if I'm asked, that's what I'm going to call it. I don't take talking points from the DNC. But
you know, and it really did seem to me like he's justifying the decisions he's made after the fact with, you know, really reasonable things. But at the time, he was playing politics.
Right.
At the time, he was trying to make sure that he positioned himself properly to be successful moving forward. More so, I think, than he was concerned about just about anything else.
Yeah, but doing the right thing.
Exactly. That doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, I guess I want to be careful about putting too much of the onus on Comey, because I think that there was clearly wrongdoing by some parties involved.
No, without a doubt. No, I don't. But you know what? He's the head of the FBI. Trump has to take full responsibility. Again, Shrump. Why do I keep calling him that? That's how I should just rename him Shrump now. Trump is he's shady. He's a politician. It's what they do. It's the way they live. You know, right? The director of the FBI, as you said, I expect something a little bit different from a non-politician that's running an organization like that. Interesting.
I spent some time consulting, and I would argue that I got a better sense of what I think working for President Trump would probably be like, or interacting with President Trump. I got a better sense of what that might be like by working with CEOs as a consultant than I think I did working for commanding officers as a Marine. But I always want to think of the president as the commanding officer, you know. But I think Trump is a great example of a guy who he got where he did successfully in business because he plays that game very, very well. And I think if Comey had brought, I don't know, if he had brought more of a politician side even, he could have been more successful. But it just seems to me like he was entirely concerned with protecting his six and not really that concerned with much else. Right up until he got fired, at which point, you know, he started kind of changing his tune.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like you said, there's a difference between shady and illegal. And I think that even if we do, at least from what I've seen so far, and, you know, and I've taken flack before for not being unapologetically pro-Trump. I try my best to be as objective about politics as I can.
Where is the requirement to be unapologetically pro-Trump? Who the hell can be unapologetically pro-Trump? The guy's a train wreck, right?
I like
some of his policies in terms of defense, in terms of deregulation, you know.
Agreed.
But look, I think the country would be much better off with Mike Pence as a standard bearer. But Mike Pence didn't get elected. Donald Trump did. So until he's impeached, but how do you get behind Donald Trump? I don't know how you do it. It's like painful.
You know, it's tough, man. But if, you know, I live in the social media sphere, and
right.
Every time StopRep posts an article, you know, even if there isn't anything political about the article, the comment arguments immediately turn to political.
God.
And, man, I got to tell you, there's just the vitriol that's spewed between people of either party. I think that the people who have really, really passionate beliefs one way or the other don't realize that they have more in common than a lot of us that are kind of more towards the middle and are willing to look at these things like, that guy may be on my team, but that doesn't mean he's making a good decision. And it seems like the guys that are real far on the left and just want to yell at people, and the guys that are real far on the right and just want to yell at people, have much more in common with one another than they do with the rest of their party. Unfortunately, they're just the guys that you see the most.
Well, let me ask you about that, because you wrote an article about the aftermath, kind of going down this line. You wrote the article about the whole Kathy Griffin thing. Talk to me about that, because essentially the argument you're laying out is, you know, we can't even be honest enough with ourselves to say that when there's an idiot from our group, we can't all look at him and say, yeah, he's an idiot. We can't, right?
It's true. We really can't. You know, and it the idea behind that article actually started in the subscriber comment section on a StopRep article I had written a few weeks earlier, where I had talked a little bit about Comey and about President Trump, but for the most part, like I said, I do try to avoid strictly domestic politics because that's not really in our lane at SASA. But, you know, I had mentioned it in an article, and just by mentioning it just ignited a debate in the comment section, which is great. It is great for people to get involved politically. But watching the debates back and forth, it really was clear that it was about teams, not about what actually happened or what evidence we surfaced. You know, confirmation bias, I know people talk about a lot lately. It doesn't make it less true. You know, we tend to seek out information that supports our pre-existing position. And when we're faced with information that contradicts it, especially nowadays, it's fake news, you know, or we disregard it. We disregard the source if it's something we don't like, whereas if it's something we do like, we tend not to even look at the source. And this whole Kathy Griffin thing was a great example of that. This woman has a career that clearly, I mean, she calls herself a D-list celebrity. At this point, I'm not even sure, you know, you could call her a D-list. This was a calculated PR move.
Right.
She can't act surprised to find people were upset that she held the decapitated mock head of our president. People are going to be upset. And, you know, a lot of people presented that argument. Just imagine if we had done this with Barack Obama in office.
Right.
And what I try to tell people when they present that argument is that people did. You know, folks on the right, Ted Nugent's the one that gets touted a lot, but a lot of folks on the right did dumb things. Individuals on the right did dumb things, like this individual, Kathy Griffin, on the left, did a dumb thing. But when Kathy Griffin does it, people on the left immediately feel forced to defend her position simply because she shares ideologies with them. And anytime, we can't allow Trump to be right about anything, even if it's that you shouldn't pretend to cut off his head. But conversely, you know, on the right, we're like, well, look at the left. They're not adhering to their own laws, their own mandates about being politically correct. And that's true. It was incredibly hypocritical of them to defend her. But let's not forget that it was just her. You know, the DNC didn't decide to make this photo shoot. Or, you know, a whole group of American Democrats didn't get together and fund this photo shoot. It was one crazy lady, you know. The problem that I have is when people defend that, specifically just because it was Donald Trump. They don't like Donald Trump, so now it's her First Amendment rights that we need to protect.
Right.
People are confused about First Amendment rights. That means the government can't stop you from saying things. That doesn't free you from social repercussions for your actions. And the blowback for Kathy Lee Griffin, which was her losing, I guess, like the one job that she might have had in December.
Right.
you know, the blowback on that, you know, she wants to go on TV and cry about it, which is more of the PR song and dance, if you ask me, just trying to keep her name in the headlines. We can't go back and go, oh, no, the First Amendment says that CNN can't cancel her New Year's Eve gig. No, that's exactly what CNN can do. That's how we socially regulate our culture. We don't need to legally regulate our culture by having her investigated. But the Secret Service has to open an investigation. You know, don't be mistaken. But she's obviously not going to be arrested. The people who are calling for her arrest, I think, are short-sighted because they forget that Ted Nugent said on the radio that we should cut off Barack Obama's head. You know, just because someone says something like this, especially a public person, it doesn't necessarily, if they're calling for violence, then they should be dealt with. But if they're just making a political statement, sometimes they're just an idiot or a bleep hole, you know? It doesn't necessarily mean we need to take legal action. What it means is we need to take social action.
But it doesn't seem to me, Alex, that, and to me, this is one of the great threats of the nation. I interviewed a former senator, talking about compromise and why can't we do that? He said, "Well, Mike, let me just tell you." And it's interesting because it's linked to the Fairness in Broadcasting Act, the Fairness in Radio Act,
yep.
Something like that. It's linked to the Fairness Doctrine the Fairness Doctrine, and which used to say that you had to present balanced content. He said, "Look." There is no middle ground anymore. It's like no man's land in World War I, right? It's just barren. The only thing, if you compromise, the only thing that you'll assure yourself is that you're going to have an opponent as an incumbent in your party's primary in the following election. That you're going to get called a sellout and somebody's going to use it as leverage to run against you as an incumbent in your own party primary. He said, that's what compromise gets you now. He said, I think it's a threat to the democracy because the days of a vigorous debate, coming together, pushing the ball down the field for the American people, they don't exist anymore. They don't exist. And to me, that's a huge threat. That's not good for the country.
You know, I think you're. I remember Ronald Reagan's presidency very fondly, which might be in part because it ended when I was like four. but from the stuff that I've read about, you know, since I understand that Ronald Reagan dropped the ball on some things. For instance, HIV was something that Ronald Reagan dropped the ball on. I would argue our culture, our society dropped the ball on it, and he represented in a lot of ways the way we felt about it at the time, which was ripe with misunderstandings and misconceptions. But one thing that Ronald Reagan seemed to do, at least, you know, from my reading in retrospect, is try to compromise. You know, he was a fairly liberal Republican, you know, at least socially liberal Republican, which I think speaks to conservatism as I knew it, which was leave me alone. You know, that's always been kind of the mentality that I've embraced. I have trouble with some of the libertarian leanings when it comes to foreign policy, so I'm always reluctant to declare allegiance to one group or another.
Right.
But I think that one thing that Ronald Reagan did was he was big about the government ought to leave me alone, but he was also big about knowing everyone in the room needs to have a voice. Otherwise, someone in the room is going to feel really, really left out, and that small voice can become a bigger one, you know? And I haven't really seen that in politics during my lifetime, like during my conscious lifetime. And I wonder if it's because it's never been that way, and I just think fondly to yesteryear, or if things have really gotten that bad. And when I hear things like that story from the former senator you're telling me,
right,
it's really disconcerting to me, because it leads me to believe, no, things really have just gotten bad. It was better once. I'm sure politics was always ugly and always dirty, but it seems like at least before, Congress would pass things without it having to be voted specifically on party line.
Right.
You know, and that's what we keep seeing time and time again, is voting for your team instead of the legislation.
No, that's what I think the interesting point. Yeah, the interesting point of your article. I've got to take a quick break. When we come back, I've got about 11 minutes, and we can. I want to talk about Mosul for a few minutes, all right? Hello?
Oh, I'm still here.
Yeah, you're supposed to say okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. That sounds great. Yeah, I'm happy.
My guest, a contributing editor at SoftRep, former Marine Sergeant Alex Hollings. We're talking some of the stuff he's written and some current events. We're going to talk about written about Mosul. We'll talk about that coming up next on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. .751 on the West Coast. You know, this is Frank Sinatra.
Strangers in the night,
singing about a one-night stand.
Glances,
yeah, see, I think about stuff, okay?
What were the chances?
Yeah, this does not sound like a one-night stand, does it?
Before the night,
you know, I guess I've never really listened to the lyrics of the song and thought that much about it. Now I want to.
You got to think about it, man.
You know, once upon a time, this is really going to date me. Back in my MySpace days, Frank Sinatra's Moonlight in Vermont was the song that came on whenever you visited my MySpace page, and I'm embarrassed about that to this day.
You should. But you got, you know, look, what did Thoreau say? The unexamined life is not worth living? Think about it. Strangers in the
night.
Yeah,
right? You know?
Yeah.
I'm very good at examining how embarrassing my adolescent years were. Absolutely.
Frank Sinatra. Go figure. The Mosul. You've had your eye on it. How does it go? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think it's important to note that the Iraqi security forces are really the guys, you know, embroiled in this fight every day. You know, the U.S. coalition is supporting them. We've got people in the fight. We have people in harm's way. But this is really, it's an Iraqi-led, you know, military operation. And it is brutal in ways that a lot of us, you know, sitting comfortably back here in the States don't really recognize, in part because, you know, the guys that they're fighting are, I mean, obviously ISIS is, just their methods in general are entirely brutal, but just the entire lack of concern for human life for any parties involved, be it ISF, be it ISIS, be it the civilians caught in the way, it's not something that we're accustomed to seeing or can even really wrap our heads around here stateside, unless you're one of the few people to have been unfortunate enough to see something like this in person, you know? And so we keep hearing about these airstrikes, you know, U.S. airstrikes, coalition airstrikes, claiming, like, you know, entirely too many civilian casualties by today's standard. It's good that our technology has advanced to the point where hearing about 10 civilians dying in an airstrike is unacceptable.
Right.
That was not the case for the majority of warfare since mankind started making bombs, you know? But nonetheless, you know, we're talking about hundreds, even thousands now of civilians that have died as a result of the fight against ISIS in places like Mosul or Raqqa in Syria. But I think that the blame is being placed on the coalition and on U.S. forces a little bit unfairly. And, you know, I'm reluctant to say it that way because it makes it sound like I don't want to accept responsibility.
Yeah, are you a defender? Are you a defender? Are you an apologist for us?
To a certain extent I am. Okay. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. The same way I would say I don't have any problem with our country acting in its own best interest.
Right.
Now, the analogy I always use is, if food were to disappear right now, you know, and my wife right now is 4 months pregnant, and she and I are sitting there on one side of the road, there's a loaf of bread in the middle of it, and there's another family on the other side of the road, I'd like to think idealistically that I'd share that bread, but if sharing isn't on the table, my pregnant wife's going to eat tonight. You know, and that might not make me a good humanitarian, but it does make me a human. And I think that people who would argue with me about whether or not they would fight to make sure that their unborn child got to eat, I think to a certain extent maybe a bit naive. And so because of that, I can apologize. I can be a bit of an apologist when it comes to civilian casualties in Iraq, for instance, entirely because it's self-serving. But I acknowledge that. I understand that I'm rooting for my team and you're rooting for your team, and that there's no difference in us genetically. We're both human beings who deserve our chance. But I can't let that ideological debate get in the way of what we need to do in order to protect American lives, in order to protect allied lives, in order to get ISIS out of Mosul, for instance. And I don't want to digress too far, but I think the reason why we're seeing so many civilian casualties is really because ISIS is herding civilians into high combat areas on purpose to try to dissuade us from using these airstrikes to limit their combat abilities when they're fighting the Iraqi security force. You know, it's just like using a human shield to keep us from shooting a bullet at you. But what they're doing is they're keeping hundreds of civilians surrounding them to keep us from using targeted airstrikes. Occasionally, we are either going to make the command decision to take that airstrike, despite the fact that we might believe there could be civilians inside, or we're going to make that airstrike ignorant of the fact that there were civilians inside. And we can't shuck responsibility for that. But we're ignoring the fact that these civilians are in harm's way because whenever they try to escape, ISIS literally will gun them down in the streets.
Right.
You know, last week on Tuesday alone, I think, they killed 160 civilians, men, women, and children, as they were trying to flee the combat zone. And the reason was is that that's their protection. That's their protection from death from above. if all those civilians were to clear out of there, we could literally just get rid of that 10 square kilometer portion of Mosul and be done with it. We can't do that because there's hundreds of thousands of civilians living there. They know that. They know that those civilians are their lifeblood. So what they're going to do is do everything that in their power to keep them there, so that every time we do send troops in and have to call in for air support, for instance, some civilians will die. And in the public, perception shifts a little bit further away from supporting this prolonged effort.
All right.
And that's really that's the point of terrorism.
Right.
To, you know, initiate
It's also a lesson from Vietnam, right? It's that, look, they can have all the tactical victories they want, but the more videotape that gets pumped into their country that shows civilian casualties, then their nation will tire of it and they will leave and we will stand victorious. So to me, it's aimed at our strategic center of gravity, if you will, which is the American heartland. And now, Alex, how hard is it to get information? As a writer, do you have contacts that are on the ground there? Do you have other correspondents that you talk to? It's pretty hard to get information out of there.
It's really difficult. To be honest with you, surprisingly enough, one of my best sources of up-to-date information is Twitter. Not actually actively being on Twitter, although I do have a Twitter account. To be honest with you, it's my least favorite platform. But I use this program called Data Miner, where it literally just kind of sifts through everything that's being posted on social media all over the world, looking for key factors, and when it identifies trends, it'll alert me. So if there's a suicide bombing in Berlin today, you know, there will be 60 texts saying that there was just an explosion in Berlin with the same, you know, with close to the same GPS coordinates. Data Miner will notify me, and then I'll know a lot of times before the mainstream media starts reporting on it, because right now it's just a whole bunch of tweets. You know, I do know.
Okay, I'm curious about Data Miner. Really, and I'll quote General Zinni here, I don't have a problem with information because I get too much information. What I have a problem with is something filtering information to give me things that are important. How does Data Miner work? Because I think we all go through that. Too much stuff on all these different feeds.
I couldn't tell you for sure how Data Miner itself works. I've regularly referred to it as magic or voodoo. But it is an incredible tool. But what's important is to remember that it is just that. Because it, like when I first got access to it, I get it through work with Safra. The issue that I ran into, just like you're saying, was I was just inundated by too much information coming from too many places, to the point where I spent a few months where I just had Data Miner emails just going directly to my junk folder, and I never even looked at them. It was too much for me to keep track of at once. I've slowly but surely learned how to kind of control the filters. But the way that I use Data Miner is a good analogy for how we should kind of try to all use media, and that is view it as a tool, not necessarily as your only window. You know, Facebook's a great example. When you go on Facebook, unintentionally more often than not, you have a bit of a political sphere that exists in your newsfeed just from the people that you interact with and the friends that you have and where you come from and things like that. That's a great tool to get a sense of how people are feeling. But you have to remember that it's only a good tool to get a sense of how this small window of people are feeling. Data Miner gives you the opportunity to look at a much broader window. But you still need to be really kind of picky about what information you use. A great example is when that attack happened in the Philippines at that resort. I'm trying to remember the name of the resort. But I believe it was in Manila. There was a gunman that went into a casino and a hotel resort. They started a fire and it killed a number of people. Through Data Miner, I had a number of notifications from people who, in all honesty, are supposed to be ISIS experts, you know, in the field. You know, people, I don't want to name any names, but people who you'd expect to know. And a lot of them said that the attack was from an ISIS fighter. And I came very close to reporting that in a story, but Jack Murphy, the editor-in-chief of SOFRAP, you know, he's a former Army Ranger. He's the real deal. He's an awesome guy.
Right.
You know, he's a great person to work for because he teaches me. You know, he caught it and he said, "Hey man, I understand your sources are pretty reliable for this claim, But it's my experience that that one person in particular that most of these sources are drawing their information from isn't that reliable. And I would recommend, it's your call, but I would recommend backing up on claiming that this was directly ISIS-tied until more information comes out, or unless you can find a different source. And I was like, hey, man, you're the boss. You know, I respect that. I don't know her, and you clearly do, so why don't we pull back on it? And it came out the next day that it really wasn't ISIS-tied, though ISIS is all about branding and was happy to claim responsibility.
Right.
It was a robbery that had gone wrong. I very easily could have added to that misinformation that's floating out there in the ether had I not an editor who was better informed than I was. And, you know, it's really, really difficult. The best you can do is literally just the best you can do, but you've got to be willing, which we don't see in the media a lot, to admit that you're wrong.
Rarely.
You know?
Right. Rarely.
If you do, it'll be on page 6.
With all the rest of the apologies. Alex,
exactly.
Our time is up. We're going to have to do this again because I want to talk more about Mosul. I'll give you a call later today, because to me the storyline is significant, because what we see there is, I think, going to attempt to be replicated in a much more difficult environment in the vicinity of Raqqa. So I'll give you a call later on today, and we'll do this again. All right.
Sounds great. I'll talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks for the visit.
Have a good one.
All right. That is Alex Holland, former Marine sergeant. Yeah, and so we're going to we'll take a quick break. When we come back, Grant Newsham's going to join us here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, and we're going to talk about three things. The North Korea hits, or South Korea hits, pause on the deployment of the THAAD battery, the 6 launchers, I believe, that were supposed to go in. And I thought the 6 launchers made up the entire battery. Anyway, supposedly the president of South Korea said, no, I only thought there were 2 launchers. So he hits POSEX, the North Koreans, then over the weekend, late last week, they launch surface-to-ship missiles. What was the point of that? Is that just them being them, or is there something else going on there that we should see? And then diplomats, American types, to include the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, and the Secretary of State, and our ambassador to the UN, have all been quoted in the last week to 10 days as praising China, for their help with North Korea, which we know that that's a little bit dicey. So, anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Grant Newsham will join us, and he'll make it smart. More of on a Monday. All Marine Radio continues right after this.